This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and today our show is about, well, the greening of our main streets across the state, because it's about time. And it's a wonderful spring day, even though it's a bit coolish today. Ashley Thornburg and I are here with our great friend and horticultural expert, Ron Smith, to take your questions live on the air, or you can email them to us. It's very quick and easy to get that in.
And the number to call is 888-755-6377. And you can also email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or find us on Facebook. We are Main Street at Prairie Public. Ron, thanks for coming in today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm glad I made it this week.
Yeah, we did have a bit of a delay there.
Yes, yes.
Speaking of delay, spring.
It was good to put it off because we were very, very dry last week. And that little bit of rain that we've had and the moisture now that we have in the air is helping the plant material quite a bit. The lateness of the season forces everybody to compress next week I'll go ahead and do this, and next week I'll go ahead and do that. You can't add weeks to the spring season or the planting season.
Darn
it's
it.
Got to be done.
Yeah.
You know, now's the time perfectly to go ahead and take care of your lawn right now, not next weekend or after Memorial Day. If you don't do it now, you're going to be a little bit too late. The annual weeds in your lawn, like crabgrass and barnyard grass, are in the process of beginning to germinate because the forsythia have come out and they've dropped their flowers and the lilacs are starting to swell up. And so we're getting all these phenological indicators that the crabgrass is there starting to go ahead and germinate, and so are the other annual grasses. So if you have that kind of an annual grass weedy problem, now's the time to go ahead and do it. But if you do it and you have a thin lawn, like I see somebody asked already on a question, you cannot overseed with desirable grass seed if you put down this pre-emergent herbicide, unless you get some very special pre-emergent herbicides to control the crabgrass, and they're very hard to find locally here. So then, of course, fertilize the grasses. I'm assuming that people have already sharpened their mower, have it serviced, have it set at the right height to go ahead and mow it 3 inches and mow it on a regular basis. Don't take off any more than a third. And your lawn should take off and be very satisfying to you with just normal, minimal care.
The number to call, 888-755-6377. That's 888-755-6377. Or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic. Ron, we had a cold night last night.
Yes, we did. And I'm glad you brought that up, Doug, because we paid the consequences of not paying it much attention to the cool nights. And so my wife and I brought in her plants that she had set outside.
A horticulturist put his plants out too early?
Yes. Well, you know, you're so anxious, you know, after this winter. You know, it's an emotional thing. It's not a logical thing by any means. You just get so anxious. Finally, that blasted snow is gone. Finally. A week ago Friday, I still had ice in my irrigation box.
Yeah.
Yeah, ice. I mean a block of ice down there surrounding my irrigation box in the ground. By Monday, it was gone. The heat. It was 80-some degrees on Monday.
It was gone. Beautiful weekend.
Yeah, and so that made a big difference. And so, you think, oh, we're past the cold. No, you can have these yo-yos, those roller coaster temperatures taking place that can fool anybody, everybody, and it teases you. You think, we're past this. You know, there's enough residual heat in the air and the ground. No, you can get that cold snap that comes down and wipes out your tomato plants, your pepper plants. Those are the most vulnerable plants out there. If you have perennials that you've started from seed or had outside, they'll probably get through that pretty well without any problem. So, yes, it was cold last night, and Grand Forks suffered. Thank goodness we didn't suffer, but we didn't want to take any chances here in Fargo.
Just a reminder that May can really be all over the temperature chart.
Yes, 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 yes. One other thing. Yes, this is a tick season. Tick season. So don't be too careless. If you're in a typical residential area like I am, you don't really have to worry about ticks. If you go hiking through the woods and grasses and tall grasses and wildflowers, like some people that I know that like to do that, you need to be very careful. Check over your your skin very carefully and make sure there's no ticks deciding to take up an address there on your bodies, because they can transmit this, what's called Lyme disease.
And other things,
As well. So check that very, very carefully. And one last thing, and then I'll stop lecturing. If you haven't had your tetanus shot, I just got my tetanus shot this last time. It's a good idea for gardeners to get a tetanus shot every 10 years. Tetany is in the soil. It's a bacteria that's in the soil, and it can cause all kinds of problems. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't want to get into trying to explain what the tetany is, but it is something that you need to have taken care of. It's a simple shot. They don't use big square needles, a tiny little needle that they stick in your arm, and bingo, it's over with. You know, and it's good for 10 years.
Horticulturist Ron Smith live in studio. The number to call, 888-755-6377. You can also email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org, just like Ellen in Fargo, who is a listener, a member, and a frustrated hedge owner. The rabbits were savages this winter, and
yes,
I'll pass a photo over here so you can see what they did to the cotoneaster hedge. Mm-hmm. And she wants to know if it's doomed. Will they have to cut it down? And if that happens, will it grow back fuller? It takes so long, and the yard just feels naked without the protection of the hedge. So take a look at this photo.
Yes,
and
I've seen it many times. In fact, all I have to do is go out to my own backyard to see damage like that. We put up a plastic fence around our nine bark and our hibiscus. You know, one of those roll-out fence. You roll it out, you put stakes in there, and you secure it down to the ground. And we were patting each other on the back. We did a wonderful job of keeping the rabbits out. They aren't going to go through. In fact, it's sold. Keep the rabbits out with this plastic fence. Guess what they did? They ate right through it. They ate a hole in it and got in there. And so it's frustrating with them. Now, the best thing she can do, this is a photo of an old hedge of cotoneaster. There's a lot of energy stored in that root system and crown of these plants. And so she goes in there and just cuts those back, gives them a good hard cutting back right down to the essentially just a stub, an inch or two stub above the ground. She can do it with a chainsaw if she wants. It'll spring right back. She'll probably get 2 or 3 or 4 feet of growth this growing season alone. Next year,
get a cat. An outdoor
or
cat.
A dog or a small mountain lion or something like that. I mean, they're terrible. They're almost as bad as a plague of locusts to farmers out in Utah or something like that. They're unbelievably bad.
And they're almost domestic now, because I walked out on my deck last night and had a stare down with a rabbit for an hour.
Are you going to eat that carrot, lady?
Yeah. They're the worst pest that we have. Not, you know, until mosquitoes come out and start bugging us. And right now they're the worst pest during the winter months and in the early spring. When they have their babies, they get their cute little babies that come out, and they eat everything.
Yeah.
They nibble down everything. Your perennials that are coming up, if you put down fresh planted annuals, they'll come after those and wipe them out overnight. Don't make the mistake that the Smiths made years ago. Oh, we planted these wave petunias, and they look great. Well, Betsy and I were tired. Do we need to do anything to protect these tonight? No, let's just go in and go to bed. The sun was down, and we were dead tired. I'll take care of it tomorrow morning. Get up the next morning, bing, nothing there but a little nib, a little stub. No plants at all. And they were beautiful plants when we put them. We paid like $1.25 for them each back in those days because they were brand new. And we were so disgusted and discouraged, we said, we're not going to go out and spend that money again for these plants if the rabbits like them that much. Well, we somehow got the rabbits under semi-control. They started coming back, and they grew, and they grew, and they grew. And we did end up by having beautiful-looking wave petunias at that particular year. But
so could Ellen just plant a big thing of wave petunias not that far from the cotoneaster hedge and just like distract
the preferential eating, but what are they going to do in the wintertime? You can't keep wave petunias out there in the wintertime, that's for sure.
I suppose.
So
we're still looking for the perfect rabbit repellent or something that deny them access to everything we love growing in front of our house.
One of your people here said, Plant Skid was recommended to me for keeping deer away from my apple tree. It's also supposed to keep rabbits away, okay? And it has been used, and it's been successful. You know, this poor chap here, whoever JP is, said, you know, he sprayed sparingly the young trees. They deer didn't seem to be deterred, and I fear they may have killed my newest apple tree. Should I apply more Planskid this year, or would it be better to sit in my backyard all night and just throw a bottle of Planskid at the deer? Okay. The trick is to get it out there. From what I'm told by people that are animal control experts, and I'm not one of them, but I'm parroting back what they told me. You need to get out there before they discover this is a feeding possibility, because they set up a little route. Oh, this is good tasting. We're going to come back and eat this, and we're going to come back and eat this, and we're going to come back and eat. If you get it down there before they begin feeding and be very religious about your application, that will help to control them. The hardest thing is to make that a religion, because you get sick and tired. Oh, God, do I have to go out and spray the rabbits or the rabbit repellent or deer repellent? It's raining out. It's cold out. It's miserable out. It's windy out. And you blow it off one night after, and maybe another night, and maybe another night. And you say, that's it.
Ron, you started by talking about lawn preparation, this being the ideal time for that. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a very relevant question from a listener in Minot, and she says, last year you mentioned Navigator as the name of a good grass seed for North Dakota.
Is
this a variety or a brand name? Where could I find it? I live in Minot.
Minot. Okay. She needs to go to whatever the Lowe's there up in Minot, their garden center, their nursery. And ask for Navigator Creeping Red Fescue. Okay, it's the name is a cultivar name. Navigator is a cultivar of Creeping Red Fescue. So if she goes there and asks for Navigator, if Lowe's says no, we don't have it, check to see if it's a part of a blend or a mixture there. And if it is, then that will be effective. But you can go down here to one in West Fargo. I can't think of the name of it now.
But just a big box.
No, it's a wholesaler.
Okay.
I'll think of it as the show goes on, and I'm thinking of something else that'll pop up. They do have Navigator in bulk, and so somebody around here, I know Shields here locally has it. Do they have a Shields up in Minot? I don't know, but Shields does carry the Navigator. So,
but it's somewhat broadly available?
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful grass. It's fantastic. I mean, if you can fall in love with a grass, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. But if you do, I mean, because it grows beautifully in full sun. It grows beautifully in shade. It makes a nice, dense turf. Once it's established, the weeds hardly have a chance to get in there unless you do something to tear up that solid canopy.
The number to call, Ron Smith, 888-755-6377. You can also email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or find us on Facebook, Main Street at Prairie Public. Speaking of lawns, Barb in West Fargo wants to know how to thicken a very thin lawn, and specifically this thin part is shaded by big trees.
Yes. Well, I'll go back to Agassiz seed. That's the name of it. Agassiz seed in West Fargo. Barb, do you hear that? Go out to Agassiz seed in West Fargo and see if they you can buy a small sample of the grass seed that's Navigator, or else they can tell you where to go. I know they have blends or mixes of that at Shields here in Fargo, but it's a very good grass. It'll grow in the shade of your big tree. The best way to put that down would be to get out there this weekend, if at all possible, scratch the surface of the ground with a garden rake, or you can take a power rake over it, but don't get down so deep that you're going to be tearing up a lot of soil and bringing up a lot of weed seeds, because the weeds will definitely grow no matter what. But then go and put this Navigator Creeping Red Fescue down, or the blend of this Navigator, and it'll fill in and look absolutely beautiful. I give you my word that will work. It's almost as guaranteed as death taxes and robocalls and surveys.
Well, the plant doctor is in. Give him a call, 888-755-6377, or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. We'll be back with Ron Smith in just a moment.
This is Bill Thomas at Prairie Public, and we have just wrapped up the on-air portion of our spring membership drive, but you can still contribute, and we still have those fun special thank you gifts. You can see them at prairiepublic.org, or you can hear about them when you call 800-359-4145. I want to say thank you to Birnbaum's Deli and the Red River Coffee Company for contributing food. Thank you to the volunteers who helped us out during the drive. And of course, the biggest thank you goes to our listeners who have become contributing members to Prairie Public. Without you, we could not do it. So thank you.
Thank you indeed. Main Street really appreciated the support that you sent us by way of calling us or emailing us or going online or however you wanted to do it. And Diane Gunvoldson of Rothsay, Minnesota, became a new member because she says she loves Prairie Public, and we loved her right back because she won the $75 Visa gift card. Thanks for being a member, Diane, and congratulations on your victory. Ron Smith is here taking your calls, 888-755-6377. Email us at Main Street at Prairie Public, or you can message us on our Main Street at Prairie Public Facebook page.
We have an email question from Lori. Can you plant sugar snap peas in a container? And if so, what is the adequate depth container for the roots?
Oh, you want a standard pot, a 6-inch pot that would be do a beautiful job of growing those snap peas. Stay away from what they call the azalea pots, which are short, squat pots. Get my tongue straight here. Short, squat pots. You want to plant the standard 6-inch pot that has a 6-inch opening there, and it's a nice deep pot, and the root system can go ahead and fill it up. And she'll get some very, very good sugar snap peas from something like that, assuming that she wants to do them on an individual pot. If she wants to grow them in a big container and have a whole lot of these particular plants coming up, then she needs to go for a bigger container and maybe a window box type setting.
Ron, let me ask you a question some other people may have experienced. I did. In across the state of North Dakota and certainly all around Fargo, you see these beautiful emerald green arborvitae everywhere, mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. beautiful pyramid plants that are very bold landscape statements outside of homes.
Sure.
I have two. Mm-hmm. And in April, we had that very heavy, wet snow, bent them over and pulled branches out and removed the pyramid shape. I've taken some twine and stuff and mm-hmm. tried to kind of put them back together and pull them straight up again. Mm-hmm. What are the chances that I'll be successful?
Pretty good, but I would substitute the twine for some cloth.
Okay.
Because the twine is going to have an abrasive effect on it, and it's liable to do some girdling and not do it any good. If you can get some old sheeting or old undershirts or some cloth material that you can go ahead and kind of tie them up that way, then the plant will get the idea that's the way you're supposed to grow mm-hmm. and hopefully get its strength back and straighten up. Its natural tendency is for it to be pyramidal.
Yes.
So even if it gets bent over, if you bring it back, it's going to pretty much get the idea, quote-unquote idea, that it's going to be growing straight.
So how long is this going to have to wear a T-shirt?
I would say for this entire growing season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and then,
sorry,
then,
neighbors.
Yeah. It's one of those things. What is uglier looking, a flopped-over arborvitae that's supposed to be upright, or an arborvitae that's trying its best to recover from that terrible operation or that terrible trauma of the winter wet snow that we had? But you're doing a good thing. You're doing a very good thing. And so there's a special place for people like you in heaven.
Okay. Well, here's hoping I don't have to go there too soon.
The number to call is 888-755-6377. Again, 888-755-6377 or email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. Marie wants to know, when is the best time to trim my blackthorn hedge?
Okay, she must mean buckthorn hedge. Okay.
Okay,
because I
email may have auto-corrected
yeah,
that.
Okay. buckthorn. Anytime. She can get out there right now with a chainsaw if she wants to and cut the doggone thing down, and I guarantee you, you don't have anything to worry about. It'll pop right back up again. So if it's gotten too big, too rambunctious, too overcrowding, too ugly, things that you don't like, just take that chainsaw, if you know what you're doing, or find somebody that knows what they're doing carefully, and cut it right back at ground level, and it'll come back out of the ground, I assure you.
That seems to be your general advice for hedges. Is that
pretty much so. But this one is literally guaranteed to come back. It's one of these plants that the University of Minnesota, the whole state of Minnesota, has banned that as a plant because it takes over understories, subcanopies. And the problem with it is that it produces a little black berry, and the birds love it. They eat it like mad. And, they, of course, they poop it all over the place. The seed comes up everywhere the seed lands, everywhere the seed lands. Okay, if there's moisture and a little bit of soil there, it will pop and grow. And so that starts to become an invasive plant. And so we really don't want that in North Dakota if we can help it. Now, if she's got it as a hedge and she's keeping it under control, and it's not, you know, contaminated, it's not spreading into other parts of her property that she doesn't want it to be there, that's fine. But I almost hate to say this, the birds that come and eat her berries, the berries off of her plant, are taking that seed and distributing it somewhere else, and that could be a problem. If, you know,
sounds like purple loosestrife.
Yes,
they banned it in that state.
Yeah, perfect example. It's the purple loosestrife of woody plants that you don't want. I mean, and they're vigorous growers, and the buckthorn is aptly named. It's got a nice vicious little thorn at the end of every branch, so you need to be careful in trimming it back.
The number to call, 888-755-6377, or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.com. Ron Smith, the horticulturist, is in, and he'll be with us throughout the growing season regularly, just responding to your questions. And he's a wealth of information. He's got a Ph.D., a doctorate in horticulture.
Long ago.
Ron, Jessica emailed, wants to know more information about microgreens.
Okay. She's asking the wrong person. I don't know anything about it. If you're what you're talking about are starting little seeds and not letting them go to maturity and eating these little seedlings.
It would sort of be like sprouts, but instead of growing in water, they're growing in soil.
Soil, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I have to claim 100% ignorance. I don't want to even take any wild guesses because I'd probably be wrong.
Well, we go to restaurants these days, and you see them on the plate quite often.
Really?
Well, I'll interject because I just started growing microgreens, and I am a terrible gardener. I'm hugely impatient, and even I can grow an overwhelming amount
of microgreens.
Okay. I bought just a mix. You can get a specific, you know, sort of monoculture it if you want to, but the mix is really nice. I got like a spicy, savory mix. It was maybe $2, and then I put it in a plastic tray with a plastic lid, and 5 days later,
you got it coming
I had
up.
Great microgreens.
Okay.
And then you can just reseed them right on top.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen, especially Jessica. You have
this is my 2 weeks of knowledge.
That's more than I had.
So is it a salad a night then? I mean,
pretty much. Yeah, I put it on everything. I mean, just pastas and eggs and
so you buy the
sandwiches.
Seeds from a garden center or from a seed rack?
Just from a regular nursery. I don't know that I've seen them a ton of places, but at least a special something that's you know, a specialized nursery, maybe more than a big box store, is my guess. It'd be easier to find.
So you'd be buying like radish or lettuce and just clipping it early? Or what, are these
would
special greens?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think they are special.
I would say yes, because a lot of seed companies will treat their seed with a pesticide, a fungicide. And you don't want to be eating a little sprouted seedlings that have just been recently in touch with a fungicide of some kind. So they're probably in some organic session. And again, this is just my guess that, okay, you want to grow microgreens, this is how you grow them. You go over here and you use these.
Yeah, I don't think if I just let it go, I would have radishes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the plant doctor is here, Ron Smith. And if you want to call now, and we'll put you on hold for just a couple of minutes, 888-755-6377. Email your question to mainstreet@prairiepublic.com, and we'll be back with Ron with more questions after the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Next week is National Police Week in the U.S., and a recent study shows that the best state for police officers in the country is none other than North Dakota. Jill Gonzalez is an analyst for WalletHub, the personal finance website that conducted the study. She says each state was ranked in three areas, opportunity and competition, job hazards and protections, and quality of life. She says the average finding against 25 different categories placed North Dakota as the top state for cops.
First of all, it's pretty high paying. The typical salary for a detective or a criminal investigator is around $80,000. So when you pair that with the housing and the good prices there, housing affordability for policemen is very attainable in North Dakota. That looks quite different in many other states. And the other thing is we looked into the public image of law enforcement, which has been really up and down throughout the country for the past few years now. In North Dakota, there's some of the best sentiment, most positive sentiment toward law enforcement in the country.
Gonzalez says North Dakota scored a little bit lower when it came to one area, state and local police protection expenses per capita. But she says that doesn't necessarily mean it's a problematic score.
So that goes from anything from body cameras to new equipment to training, et cetera. It's not spending too much money on that. And typically, the higher, the better. However, North Dakota also ranks number one in terms of the most homicide cases solved per capita. So I think that it's actually working pretty efficiently here, not necessarily spending as much as other states, but still getting the job done.
Gonzalez says North Dakota's neighboring states did relatively well on the survey. Minnesota came in ranked at number 4, while South Dakota ranked number 17, which is still in the top half of states. Montana, however, came in at number 41. Residents of Hunter, North Dakota, didn't waste any time deciding to rebuild the community-owned bar destroyed by fire 2 weeks ago. City Council member Dustin Moen, a member of town's Commerce Improvement Association, which oversees the bar operations, says the decision came during a community meeting. He says the CNI bar has been a landmark since it opened in 1945 and became community-owned 2 years later.
It was short notice, and we just kind of put the word out that we would like some input from the town, and we had a really good turnout, and it was very positive, and everybody, you know, basically said, hey, yeah, we want to rebuild, and we want a bar in town. So we don't have a community center, and our city hall is pretty small, so the bar kind of ended up being that for Hunter.
Hamon says insurance should cover the cost of rebuilding the bar on the same Main Street location, but there will be additional costs for replacing inventory lost in the blaze. Building and fundraising committees are already organized. Fire Chief Paul Teagarden says everything is on hold until the state fire marshal wraps up the investigation into the cause, which is still undetermined. There were several break-ins the same night as the fire in neighboring Hope and Page, and the investigation will determine if foul play may have been involved. The CNI bar was burglarized in February. And a bill to put additional restrictions on cell phone use by drivers will get a hearing today in the Minnesota House. It would require drivers who use their phones to have a hands-free feature. The Minnesota Senate has declined to vote on a similar measure. Senator Jim Carlson tried to amend his plan to another bill, but he says it's all about safe driving.
It just mandates that you do not do it when you are occupying one hand with a cell phone. There are many options from Bluetooth, from built-in, from an earbud.
Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton says he would sign such a bill if it gets to his desk. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg and Ron Smith. The horticulturist is in. If you have a question for Ron, give us a call. 888, it's toll free, 755-6377, or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org.
All right, Ron, I have a question about my yard.
I
bring this up a lot. But we are transitioning to a no-mow yard,
okay.
And we did get rid of the sod in the fall, and then now this spring, seeding it with some wildflower,
okay.
A wildflower mix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I am the type to not really care about dandelions. You can eat them. You can make a tea from them. They don't bother me.
You can make wine from them.
You can make wine from them,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They have beautiful yellow flowers.
They do, yeah. Like, I don't care about dandelions, except are they so voracious of growers that they will stunt the meadow? Like, should I go and pick them before the wildflower meadow? Or if I don't care if the dandelions are happy with the wildflowers, can I just let this be?
It depends on the aggressiveness of the other wildflower seeds that you have in there. You know, keep in mind that they're all very competitive. They're like Olympians. The difference between the winner and the loser is, you know, a microsecond. It's the same thing with these wildflowers that you're talking about. Now, your yard, if I recall it properly, is mostly sunny, right?
It gets afternoon sun, yeah. The backyard is pretty dappled, but the front yard is where the meadow is.
Okay,
yeah.
So if it's mostly sunny, dandelions love full sun.
Yeah.
And they're going to grow voraciously. Now, if your wildflower mix is meant for full sun, It will be a wonderful Darwinism there to see who is the survivor.
Great. I'm going to stop listening now.
Did you do that as a kid when your mother and father were trying to correct you? Ma, I'm not going to listen to that anymore. I don't agree with you. And you blush so nicely,
too. Horoscopes, advice, anything I don't want to listen to. Okay, fine.
So we've settled that hash, haven't we?
Well, really, the dandelions will sprout and grow just about anywhere.
Yeah.
And they will probably seem overwhelming at first, but I'm willing to bet that if you are patient enough, okay, that word that kind of chokes in your throat, right? If you're patient enough, you'll probably see the wildflower mix be the predominant thing in a couple of years.
Okay.
So, and the dandelions will still be there, but they aren't going to have a chance to be the wildflower there in your mix. You have a dandelion here and a dandelion there, but look at all the other beautiful flowers you have growing here. So,
okay.
Well, here's a question for you, Ron. This is from West Fargo. We just cut down an evergreen tree. It is my understanding that I have to treat the soil before I can get grass to grow in that area. Is this true, and what do I have to do?
Really, nothing. The biggest thing that was keeping grass from growing there in the first place was a lot of shade and, of course, maybe the blanket of needles that were there. If she had the stump ground out, there's going to be a lot of sawdust there. She should try to remove as much of that sawdust as possible, compost it or give it away, throw it away, whatever, because that will inhibit the growth of seed. That will. But if you have decent soil there, by all means, go ahead and put it there. If you leave a stump there and you're going to grow grass around the stump, that should be fine too. You need to go ahead and clean up the fallen needles that are there.
Just another quick evergreen question. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of evergreens, I understand that. Mm-hmm. But should you trim branches up? Sometimes you see evergreen trees that are actually on the ground, branches are.
Yeah.
Some people trim them up, some people don't. What do you recommend?
Well, it depends on your aesthetics for an evergreen. For me, as much as possible, I like to see the evergreen have its natural shape maintained. When you get into pruning and lifting it, that's called skirting, the thing, so that you can see some light under there. You can have wind movement there. You're not going to have the branches on the ground. You're not going to have varmints like rabbits there. It's a safety thing. On many college campuses, they go ahead and skirt the evergreens of spruces because you don't want, bad people hiding behind these very, very dense evergreens. So from a standpoint of that plant, the evergreen plant itself, that doesn't make any difference. Now, we're talking about pines and spruces primarily and firs, which we don't have here in North Dakota. But pines and spruces, if you skirt them, it's not going to hurt it. It might, if you talk to a purist, a naturalist, they say, oh, you're ruining the natural beauty of that thing. Well, it depends on what you have. If you have a lodgepole pine, it's going to have a particular shape that is, very pyramidal and kind of like your arborvitae. If you have a ponderosa pine, that ponderosa pine is not going to maintain any particular shape. It's a big, globe-headed, huge, big tree that has a lot of open space under it and a lot of space within it as well. So you don't need to do anything with that. Colorado blue spruce, you need to go ahead and carefully prune that if you want to keep. For me, if I had a Colorado blue spruce on my property, I'd go ahead and take the branches off that are impacting the ground, on the ground, because they aren't going to be worth a hoot anyway. They're going to be in the way when you try to mow. You might as well get them up and out of the way so you can mow underneath the tree and be done with it.
We have an email question from Donovan in Reagan, North Dakota. Mm-hmm. We plant potatoes every year, but most of them seem to develop scabby patches on the skin. Mm-hmm. Any suggestions on how to prevent this?
Yeah, plant somewhere else. I'm sorry to give such a glib answer, but the best thing to do is to plant them somewhere else. And, if you can't do it, then I don't know what the answer is. There probably is some answer out there, but I don't know what it would be.
Are you saying, why would moving it help? Is there something
you get this
soil
continuous buildup. And if the old crop rotation, more than soybeans and corn. But the more you can rotate your garden crops from one point in your garden to another point in your garden with something completely out of the family. In other words, if you grow tomatoes in a particular spot. You get good tomatoes there. Don't grow potatoes. Don't grow eggplant there, because those are all part of that Solanaceae family. And so if you grow potatoes here, grow beans there next year and grow potatoes where you had the beans growing before.
Does that apply to if you're doing what's called multi-cropping or mm-hmm. intercropping, like mm-hmm. all these things that grow together really well if you grow them all close together, mm-hmm. do you need to worry about crop rotation as much?
No, because you're not going to be that organized. Most gardeners are not. But I had a row of corn here and a row of beans here and a row of squash there and a row of tomatoes there. Next, if there's anything at all, like my wife and I, what did we have growing here last year? Yeah. Unless you make a map, a detailed map of it, it's going to be out of your mind. So you're going to say you're going to grow your corn, beans, whatever, but they are probably not going to be in the same exact location.
You were just recently talking about these three sisters.
Yeah.
That seems related to what we're talking about here.
Yeah, very much so. For those who are getting started in gardening or who want to go back to more native gardening, and this is what our Native Americans would do, is that they would plant their corn, beans, and squash together in the same hole. And I when I heard about that, and when I was in Extension 100 years ago, I got to see this. So
you mean they put the seeds together in the same place?
Yes, yes. You have they're all warm seasons. They're
not
all
just nearby.
No. They're right there. They're warm season vegetables. They aren't. You have cool season vegetables and you have warm season vegetables. These are warm season vegetables. So you would plant these after Memorial Day weekend if you want to be on the safe side. So you put your corn, your beans, and your squash in this little hill or planting area. And they start coming up. And the corn will grow into a stalk. And then you have your bean. If you have a pole bean, the pole bean will work its way around the corn stalk.
Wow.
Okay. And if you have a bush squash or a vine squash, the vine is going to go out around the plant there. But they all kind of work together. The corn is the biggest exhauster of the nutrients in the soil. The beans will contribute some nutrients to the soil. The squash is more or less in between. It's not a big nutrient hog out of the soil. So this supports, they kind of intermarry. They support each other. And you can have a meal of corn, beans, and squash, and it's a pretty nutritious meal. I'm not a nutrition expert, but if you had Julie Garden Robinson, she'd say, oh, yeah, that would have this, and this.
Yeah.
As far
no,
as
I've
fine.
Definitely heard that those in particular should be eaten together,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Like just a vegetarian. The way your body breaks those things down, those three really complement
perfect,
each other,
yeah.
too.
Vegetarians would know that a lot better than I do.
A lot of wisdom there.
Yeah. Well, you learn it from some other people that have practiced it a long time ago. So that's very valid.
We have an email question about spruce trees. This is from Bismarck. We have a few 25 to 30-foot spruce trees, or I guess one, that has some dead or dying lower branches. At the point where the limbs connect to the trunk, there is some white sap oozing out. The Bismarck City Forester said it's probably Cytospora canker. Did I get that right?
Yep.
And prune the dead limbs. Is there anything else to do?
Well, that it is probably Cytospora canker. Your Cytospora is close enough, but I mean they call it Cytospora.
Thank you.
The tree may or may not recover. It depends on how far along it is. If he makes the cuts, he needs to cut it all the way back the particular branches that are exuding this. They typically don't fill back in. The best thing you can do is to try to keep the tree growing vigorously, not injure it with equipment, mower equipment or farm equipment, that type of thing. There's no wound dressing that you can put on a tree that's been hit by Cytospora canker. Generally, it's progressive because usually they get started in already weakened trees. So the trick is if you have spruce that are very, very important to your planting, like a screen, a privacy hedge, or something like that, take good care of them. Don't just say, well, they're on their own. I planted it 20 years ago, and now it's got to – certainly should be able to survive. So the best thing to do is to keep it watered. Don't let it go through drought stress. Don't over-fertilize it, but let the fertilization that you have with your lawn, that should be a benefit to it. Try to avoid herbicides coming in contact with the with a root system as much as possible, too.
Well, Ron, we're out of time.
Really?
Yeah.
Were we having fun? I was.
Well, we hope
we
you
always have fun.
And we hope you and Betsy have a great lawn and a great garden this year. As
we're
you always
trying
do,
our
suspect.
Best. And if we do, we'll brag about it. If we don't, we'll come back and complain about it.
Well, Ron Smith is always accessible via email. Ron, what's your email address?
Tuftruck, T-U-F-T-R-U-C-K, number1@gmail.com. So it's tuftruck1@gmail.com.
And you can also always email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org, and we will forward along that email.
And they do forward it to me, I promise.
Well, it's great to have this resource available to our listeners, and Ron will be back during the growing season, so always a pleasure to have you with us, Ron.
Thank you. Likewise.
And coming up on Main Street, what's happening?
I'm blind in one eye. I knew this since I was a child, but I did not tell anyone till I was 12. In my defense, I thought it was normal to be able to see with just one eye. Just like you can write with your right hand, you can see with your right eye.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Well, that's the question. What's going on? Every Thursday, we look at the Main Street calendar of things to do this weekend, and Ashley Thornburg and I come up with a list of stuff to share.
And as the school year winds down, it's time to think about some fun summer activities, and the kickoff event for summer art classes at the Taube Art Museum is this Friday, the 11th. This is in Minot. And this event is called Circus Circus, Night at the Museum. This is a fun for all ages event with make and take art activities that will sort of be an example of some of the art classes that they are going to be offering all summer long. There's also going to be a special visitor. They're not saying who, but normally this visitor lives at the zoo.
Okay.
So you know you're going to love it. 5:30 to 6 o'clock only for that special visitor. The event, though, is 5:30 to 7:30. It costs $5. Again, this event is in Minot at the Taube Museum of Art on Friday the 11th.
Theater NDSU presents The Ugly Duckling Saturday in Fargo at the Plains Art Museum. Join Theater NDSU and Plains Art Museum for the premiere of The Ugly Duckling, an original interactive play for audiences from age 18 months to 4 years. Get that. The Ugly Duckling is an original adaptation of the Hans Christian Andersen classic. And following the 30-minute play, toddlers and their family can enjoy story time and go on an animal safari in the Plains Art Museum galleries. It's at 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock. There are two showings of The Ugly Duckling Saturday morning in the Plains Art Museum. It's $5 for adults and children.
Horses to Tanks, Technology Impacts Tactics, Sunday the 13th in Bismarck at the Heritage Center and State Museum. This is part of a 2-year series, Perspectives on the Legacy of World War I. This exhibit in conjunction, kind of surrounding the centennial of World War I, and put on in partnership with the Historical Society of the State of North Dakota and the University of Mary. Dr. Joseph Stewart is a history professor at UMary, and he is introducing this presentation and making connections between the legacy of the war and how the mechanization of military actions impacted the scope of their field movements and troop movements. So if you are interested in history, this is a good one for you. Horses to Tanks, Technology Impacts Tactics, Sunday the 13th in Bismarck at the Heritage Center and State Museum. It gets going at 7 o'clock, and it's free.
Another show for families, Peter Pan, Friday through Sunday in Bismarck at the Balmejos Auditorium. Second Star to the Right and Straight On Till Morning. That's, of course, one of the refrains from the story of Peter Pan. Join Wendy, John, and Michael as they soar into the night sky with Peter Pan to Neverland, a world of mermaids and fairy dust where children can fly and adventures happen every day. This clever and whimsical production will delight audiences with incredible flying effects, beautiful dancing, and spectacular sets and costumes. The show is on 7:30 Friday and Saturday evening. evenings with a matinee on Saturday and Sunday at 2:30. The cost is from $10 to $31. It's Peter Pan at the Belle Mayhus Auditorium in Bismarck Friday through Sunday.
The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence, Thursday through Saturday. That's today through Saturday, the 10th through the 12th, and then again the next two Thursday through Saturdays. In Grand Forks at the Empire Arts Center, who is Watson? Well, of course, he is the trusty sidekick to Sherlock Holmes, the loyal engineer. He built Bell's first computer, unstoppable supercomputer that became the reigning Jeopardy champ. There's all sorts of things that we are calling Watson. So 7:30 p.m., you learn more about this in this time-jumping, loving tribute to people and machines. This is at the Empire Arts Center. Tickets are $14 to $17.
There'll be a Mother's Day recital Sunday in Fargo at the First Lutheran Church in downtown Fargo. This Mother's Day recital features the Dakota Brass Quintet and organist Michael Olson with music that ranges from classical to contemporary. It starts at 3 in the afternoon on Sunday, and it's free with a goodwill offering for the Global Mission Program at First Lutheran in Fargo.
All right, I'm going for my pick of the week, and I'm actually going to combine two here because it is World Migratory Bird Day. This Saturday are some of events here. In Fargo, there is the 10th Annual Fargo-Moorhead Birding Festival at Forest River at 76th Avenue South in Fargo, and of course on the river, put on by the National Audubon Society and the Fargo Park District. They provide snacks and some bird bombs and binoculars to borrow, 7 a.m. to noon, and it's free. And in Devil's Lake on Saturday, you can go to Sully's Hill National Game Preserve, again from 7 a.m. on. Begin the day early with a guided bird watch and narrated wagon tour of the game preserve. And this is also free.
The Metro Quilt Expo. I spoke with Virginia Dambach earlier this week, and she's a member of the Quilters Guild of North Dakota. It's Friday and Saturday in Fargo at the Ramada Fargo. That was formerly the Bayside or the Doublewood. It's on 13th Avenue South. The Quilters Guild of North Dakota is putting on an exhibition with demonstrations. Quilts of all types and styles will be on display from traditional to modern. It runs Friday from 9 until 6 and Saturday from 9 until 4. It costs $5 for adults. Children under 12 are free. I should mention that our What's Happening calendar of events is put together with the help of a great friend of Main Street, Seth Habhegger. So our thanks to Seth, and that's What's Happening.
The last few days were our on-air spring membership drive, and all of us at Prairie Public really want to say thank you to the people who contributed there or at another time. I'm Bill Thomas. If you are not one of the people who's contributed, you can become one very easily by calling 800-359-4145 or going online to prairiepublic.org. Pick the amount that's right for you and make a contribution, and we'll be happy to say thank you to you.
Next time on Prairie Pulse, we'll talk with Bismarck film producer and writer Dan Belinsky about his new film, The Badlands Girl, and we'll take a tour of the North Dakota Veterans Home in Lisbon. That's next time on Prairie Pulse.
Friday at 7:30 on the television service of Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 10th. The first Saturday in May marks the date for the running of the Kentucky Derby at the Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. As the most celebrated horse race in America, the race brings thoroughbred horses from across the globe to compete for the Crown of Roses. The Derby might be the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, but it takes hours, days, years, and even decades of training and know-how to produce a champion. And part of that know-how is feed, which brings us to Alan Woodbury of Woody's Feed and Grain in Dickinson, who's been feeding champions for decades. Woodbury grew up in the agriculture industry and attended North Dakota State University, where he received a degree in animal science and agricultural economics. After graduating, he moved to Dickinson and took a job as a salesman for a local feed mill. A little over a decade later, Woodbury purchased the mill, beginning Woody's Feed and Grain. Woodbury did not start out feeding horses, but rather cows. It wasn't until prompted by his brother, who was a horse trainer on the West Coast, that Woody delved into horse feed. His special blend soon caught on in the racing community. Most notable among his winners is Nyquist, the champion of the 2016 Kentucky Derby. Nyquist's trainer noted that Woodbury's summer heat blend was an essential part of Nyquist's regimen. Instead of the usual oats, summer heat uses beet pulp, a byproduct of the sugar industry. Along with high-fat soy oil, the beet fiber allows for slower digestion, which improves nutrient absorption. This is particularly important for racehorses, which need energy-dense foods and lots of nutrients. And it doesn't hurt that beets are a prominent crop in North Dakota, which makes for a plentiful supply. Alan Woodbury retired in 2015, and although the company was bought by Scranton Equity, it is still run by Alan's son. Today, Woody's Feed and Grain continues the tradition of creating great feed for champion horses. As the saying goes, if you can't beat them, join them. Today's Dakota Date Book was written by Maria Witham. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Date Book is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Three American citizens are now home from North Korea. But what happens to American detainees in Iran now that the U.S. is out of the Iran nuclear deal?
It seems unrealistic to think that Iran would agree to engage in a direct set of negotiations, whether it's for the nuclear deal, whether it's for prisoners' release.
A journalist once detained in Iran on the fractured state of diplomacy with the U.S. on the next morning edition.
That's tomorrow morning, right here on Prairie Public.
We're nearing the end of our Main Street Hour, but I wanted to take the opportunity to thank those of you who participated in our spring membership drive. It does make a difference. For those listeners who chose to become members, we appreciate that step you took. And for those members who chose to increase their donation to support Prairie Public, thank you very much as well. And one last time, if you wanted to remember the number and maybe even pick it up and give us a call, 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. Again, thank you for those who did. Friday on the show, we'll preview the provocative conversation that Jack Weinstein, the host of Why Philosophical Discussions of Everyday Life, will have on this Sunday's show. And Jack's always an interesting guest. And every Friday, we talk with our news director, Dave Thompson, about the stories that have been making headlines. So we hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.